Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough. This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze up on the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held onto our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my francais. Now every week the absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching Nebion doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously, I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back, the slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old. And like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy, and we know him.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas, primetime Madison. This is episode 118 of The Prerogative. And on this episode, well, Mazel Tov and Happy Passover! Yes, it is a celebration in my house because, ladies and gentlemen, it is Passover for a few more days. Not that Passover is exactly my favorite holiday. In fact, it's one of my least favorite, but that's not the point. That's the point. The point is, it's Passover, and what better excuse, I mean reason, than that to review a movie I have never watched until the couple days ago I just watched it. That being the animated epic of the Ten Commandments, Prince of Egypt, from 1998 by DreamWorks Pictures, before they went CG. Yes, yes, I've been waiting so long actually to actually watch this movie and review it. It's like been on Netflix like the entire time, didn't go off and everything, but I was like, no, I gotta wait and watch this during Passover for whatever reason. Because I guess me watching this at Thanksgiving makes no sense at all. But yes, the 1998, the Disney-style animated music epic. And by Disney-style, I guess they mean we took a lot of motherfuckers from Disney. Because it's like, here's a fun game to play. When the credits roll, take a shot every time you see a name of a person who used to work for Disney. You'll be drunk within 30 seconds. It's like, God damn it! Not another one! It's over! I tapped out! Because you have it directed by Brenda Chapman, you have storyboard artist who worked with Robert Allen on, you know, Beauty and the Beast, worked on Little Mermaid, worked on Hunchback and Notre Dame, was a head of story for The Lion King, and of course, after her time here at DreamWorks, would go back to Pixar and work some bit on Cars, would be the main female director for Brave before controversy goes through all that, but we can ignore that. But you know, you got that, you got Hans Zimmer, who's doing the score, who scored The Lion King. You got Stefan Swarf, the lyricist, who like worked on Hunchback and Notre Dame and Pocahontas. And it's just name a few. And you know, Randy Cartwright in animation, and of course, Liz does not forget, this is DreamWorks Pictures being the main producer-director, running the whole thing is Jeffrey Katzenberg, former runner of Disney Animation Studios when it was good, who, you know, difficulties with Eisner caused him to leave, and which, by the way, I don't want to get into that. There's a great documentary called Waking Sleeping Beauty that goes into what happened and the unfortunate death that really led to Katzenberg and Eisner splitting. And I completely blank on the name. It's the third guy there, and I completely apologize. It's a really sad thing. But yeah, very... You know, the only thing missing from this is by Disney. Because it certainly is by DreamWorks in a certain way. This, if there was anything that screamed Disney without being Disney, this movie was it. But yes, The Prince of Egypt, and like I said, what a better time than Passover for the... Let's see, this is what? Wednesday this is coming out. For the two more days that Passover is upon us. And by two more days, I mean technically two more days. After this past weekend, my family was like, fuck it, we've had enough Passover. 2 days and we were done. Well, technically 3 days because it started sunset at... I'm not going to go into Jewish law. Well, I am at some points, but... It's kind of a Jewish story. We'll have to talk about some Jewish things because it's Passover. No one will be here. You see the matzah and the sun. You know, I think of the Robin Williams joke. Like, why are we eating another bed? Because we need to get out of Egypt so we can screw up an election in Miami. Or something along those lines. I'm probably messing that up. Am I? You tell me. Anyways, a bit of a warning for just a couple things we have to talk about before we get into the review proper, as we usually do. And the first one being this. Warning! 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 Danger, Will Robinson! Danger! If you cannot handle people talking about religion and saying things that you may or may not, turn this podcast off now. Just please, turn it off now. Skip this episode. I really don't think your life depends on listening to this episode. Yes, I'm telling you not to listen to this episode. Because I am not going to apologize for things I am going to sit there and may or may not say. Because, fuck. Yeah. Just,
fuck you.
Take care of yourself.
You know, this is a podcast review of a movie that is, yes, based off a biblical story. In a moment, I'll be getting into a certain element at the very beginning that kind of pisses me off, and you'll see why I'm giving this warning beforehand. So just note that if you continue to listen to this podcast, in particular when it gets to the review proper or in a couple minutes when I talk about the thing, you were warned. You do not have a right to complain. I'm sorry. You don't. I told you. I am probably going to piss you off. There's no I might piss you off or I may piss you off. With my track record, I'm going to piss you off. I'm just sitting there and saying it. Because I don't give a fuck anymore. See this? See this smile right here that you can't see? This is the I don't give a fuck smile. Which, by the way, may, with all the cursing I'm doing, may allude you to the fact that, you know, he must really hate this movie. He's gonna bury it. Not exactly. Don't get your panties in a wad. But the point being this. I'm probably going to say, and I know I'm probably going to say, because I have a track record of foot and mouth disease, of saying things that piss people off. It's part of the reason the latest intergalactic graphic review has not been released yet. Because I really have to edit it. Because there are things I'm going to cut out. Because we talked about the Batgirl cover controversy. And, you know, I didn't like how unprepared I was. Anyways. That's a different podcast altogether. So, like I said, you have been warned. As far as I'm concerned, I am no longer going to apologize. I probably am, but still, I'm no longer going to honestly apologize for anybody who might be offended by anything I might say. They are my opinions, I stand by them, they are what they are, deal with it. You know, this is going to be a podcast of a review of an animated epic that is based off of, not a true-to-life adaptation of, but based off a story from the Bible. Got it? Get it? Good. On to more pleasant things. I do want to give a big shout-out to, of course, our big fan favorite. You may have heard that we had a new intro. That was Nerdcore Absolution. It was recently released by our good friend Richie Branson. And he did one. It's a collaboration he did with Kadesh Flow. It's a great track. And they then did a remix featuring Steve Bloom on there at the beginning, I believe it began in some parts in the middle. Though we did use that one you heard there didn't use the Steve Bloom thing. Even though you hear Steve Bloom, that was taken from another thing I've remixed together and put together. I want to give a shout out because he's been doing great stuff. The Oversight, he's recently, about a couple months ago, released Otaku Tuesday Volume 3, which has some great tracks, including Regalia Flow, which is his rap on Kill la Kill. He has a rap there on Attack on Titans, on Sword Art Online, just to name a few. It's great. He's also released as part of his Otaku gang, and I want to, you know, this podcast is a huge supporter of hashtag Otaku gang. Trend it, tweet it, make it stand, baby. Where he's releasing tools for people to use some instrumentals of him. And I'm going to sit here and say that you're not hearing it now, you're hearing the track I usually use, which is, I use DJ Clark Nova's music in particular, it's Supernova, Super Mega Mix, excuse me. But I'm going to be mixing it up for every episode. You may hear DJ Clark Nova, but you're from now on probably also going to be hearing some instrumentals from Richie Branson. Mind you, I do this because I think it sounds good at the beginning here where I'm talking a lot. And also for the fact that, you know, I want to, you know, play the music to, you know, hey, if you like the music you're hearing in the background, you know, go check these people out, download their stuff. It's worth supporting because they do great stuff and I want to support them. And like I said, the Absolution Network and Tom's Prerogative is a proud supporter of hashtag Otaku Gang, of Richie Branson, DJ Clark Nova, and everybody of the Nerdcore scene. I just want to put that out there right there. So go to www.richiebranson.com. You know, the musician, not the mogul.
Don't be afraid.
You can get free downloads of his stuff. Check it out. Use his stuff to create, because he's putting it out there free to use. Just give him credit, as part of the reason I'm doing this here. And just, you know, again, create great stuff with it. You know, so represent that hashtag Otaku Gang. With that, let's get into sort of the little preamble I want to get to in Prince of Egypt. You know, this is going to be a very fun movie, because I'm going to sit here and say right now, this is kind of like Frozen, but even more so. And I say that in the standpoint of, this is another example of a movie that is good, not great. In fact, this movie is so close to that line of great. You know, I don't know whether it is great or good. Or should I say very, 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 very good. And it's something I've pushed back and forth, you know, since I watched this movie, mind you, and trying to develop my feelings for the movie. So it's going to be very interesting getting into this review. The thing I kind of want to talk about that happened before the movie started, and it also happened at the end of the movie. There these two things that I liked, though the first thing kind of also didn't like. The thing that I'm mixed on is that they put a little preamble, you know, that, you know, this is a animated epic that is based off of biblical stories, and that artistic license has been taken, and no attempt at defending, you know, basically, sort of, like I just did, I gave you a warning that I may offend you. It's basically the same thing. I hate that, and I like that. I love it because I love the fact that, you know, here's this major studio, you didn't have to do it, and they took time to say, you know, we're not out to offend anybody. We're trying to be as, you know, respectful to everybody's religion as possible, which they were. And that really shined with the part I'm going to talk about that I really liked at the end. At the same point, there's just something inside of me that really hates that. It's like, this is an animated epic musical. I'm sorry. I'm pretty damn sure that Moses, is when he parted the Red Sea, said, "Come on, Israelites, let's tiptoe through the windows, through the tulips with me." I have a hard time seeing Ramsey going, "Oklahoma." You know, I just do. I highly doubt that many people existing definitely musically inclined to sing and dance. It should be obvious that artistic liberties were taken with this story. But we, and I'm not saying, because like I said, I do enjoy the fact and appreciate that they did take the time, but it's because I don't think they had to. And they shouldn't have to. We shouldn't be so sensitive about this stuff. Look, I'm a Reformed Jew. That being, you know, Reformed Judaism is, I like to think of it as what our own connection to God is. You know, it's, yeah, the Bible, you know, the Torah says one thing, but it's all about what do we feel the Torah is saying about based on our own connection to God. That being said, my own personal faith is Reformed Judaism with sprinkles of other religious beliefs, pagan, Wiccan, Buddhism, Confucianism, some Shinto, because I, you know, I like to take ideas from other religions. Like, this is something I really connect to, it's something I agree with, and I feel it's similar to this part of my Judaism, and I sort of, I'm more engaging, accepting of other religious beliefs for that reason, because I think all of them are connected in some form or another in certain aspects.
Who cares?
Well, whatever you think is best, brother.
Fuck you.
Take care of yourself.
At the same point in time, my religion, my faith is a tradition. It is not the law. And I think far too many people make this mistake. That, in particular, in watching movies that are based off the Bible. You know, they take the religion as law, and so these adaptations have to be that word, non-negotiable, non-debatable adaptations. They have to be by the word what the Bible says, or the Old Testament, or the Quran, or whatever. You know, me, I don't care. You know, if you want to have Moses and Ramsey fight in mobile suits while rainbows go overhead, if it tells a good story, go right ahead! Because it's a tradition. It's tradition. And if I can ever remember that tune from Fiddle on the Roof, I'll be able to make this joke so much better. Anyways, the point I'm getting at is that our faith's our tradition, and we should take it so sensitive when somebody takes artistic license in trying to tell a story. What should matter is that they tell the story well, which I think they did very well here. And that's why I really enjoyed the last part, because sort of behind the scenes, in doing research and wanting to get some of the religious aspects of it correct, you know, they brought in priests and rabbis and imams to talk about, you know, to get sort of the biblical facts right. And in turn, what they did was, at the end of the movie, after the movie, right before the credits, they showed three quotes. One from the Torah, one from the Old Testament, and I'm not going to get into semantics of the Old Testament being the Torah, because it is, that's the point. And then one from the Quran. all showcasing that, you know, Moses had passages in each of, you know, this story was talked about in each of these three books. You know, something I've recently learned. If I had seen this movie in 98, I probably would have learned more then about it. But I feel very blessed that I have been part of some interfaith, you know, sort of educational aspects where imams have come to my temple and I've gotten to talk to them about, you know, what does the Quran say about this and some of the stories of the Quran. And, you know, one of the, I think, most fascinating things I've learned about the Muslim and Islamic religions is that, you know, Moses and Jesus and all the prophets that are part of my tradition and my faith and devotion are prophets in Islam as well. It basically comes down to the idea is that whereas, you know, Judaism stopped with Moses and King David, and, you know, Christianity stopped with Jesus, he's the final prophet, they say that God's work wasn't done and that Muhammad's the final prophet. That's the putting it in a very basic way as to what I was taught. So, because of that, I really love the fact that they paid respect to the three religions there. So I just want to get out of the way because that's the thing that's probably going to piss everybody off the most. So if you're pissed off, you can feel it. Just hit that stop button and send me hate mail because you know you want to. I'm really in the, like, you know, tell me everything I said was wrong. Please tell me what I said was wrong. I really dare somebody. Because I love this guy. I'm in full Jew mode right now. I'm ready to debate. I'm telling you. Anyways, with all that being said and hatred out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our review proper of The Prince of Egypt. Because goddammit, I've been speaking for 20 minutes on all this stuff. So, Prince of Egypt follows a young Prince of Egypt by the name of Moses, who, as a child, was found floating in the Nile River in a reed basket by the queen and was adopted as her son. But along the days go long, and as his brother Ramses is a chief architect, he finds out that he is really a Hebrew. And upon accidentally killing a slave master, he runs away, where he eventually marries a young woman who was formerly caught and brought to his house. We'll get to that. And he becomes a shepherd, and one day he sees a burning bush that's talking to him in his voice, which should have been the first question in his mind that I want some screwed up, I wonder what was in that wine I drank last night. Jethro! Anyways. By the way, Jethro, I forgot that name. Anyways, moving on. So, the burning bush tells him to, you know, go free, let my people, well, don't let my people go, but go tell, go to Moses and tell the land, tell Pharaoh, let my people go. And to which Moses goes down to Egypt land and tells old Pharaoh, hey, let my people go. And Ramses trying to hold on to his legacy. I can't, Moses. But you're my brother, so just go away. To which 10 horrible plagues are unleashed because nothing says peaceful religion like the vengeful killing of the firstborn. And, the Pharaoh says, that's it! Hebrews, get out! And then, according to Robin Williams, they cut the foreskin off their penis and barely break their, bake their bread, but that's a whole nother story. But Moses then leads them down to the Red Sea, where the Red Sea's parts, as the Egyptians are coming, he leads the Hebrews across the Red Sea, crosses the ocean on the Egyptians. Ramses is left holding the bag, and the Israelites are free as Moses goes back to God and brings back the Ten Commandments. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Prince of Egypt.
Many nights we pray with no proof and we are not afraid, although we know there's much to fear. We were moving mountains long before we knew we could.
And let's get right into it. Let's talk about music. Now, I guess we'll start off with the songs. Like I said, you had two former Disneys. Take a shot! By the way, another game you can play. Listen to this podcast, and every time I make mention of somebody being formerly of Disney, take a shot. Somebody please play this game, because I want to know how long it takes you to get drunk. I really do. The songs are okay. One thing to note about the both the score and the sound, the score and the songs, excuse me, is that there were three. Yes, count them, three soundtracks with Prince of Egypt. You had a country themed Nashville version and a gospel based inspirational soundtrack. So one for the country and one for the urban, because we got to make them people happy. Why? I have no idea. My vote would have been, hey, it's a Jewish story, let's get a Jewish chorus and have everybody suffer. But that's a whole different story. And some people are like, what is he saying about a Jewish chorus? For all the Jews out there, they know what the hell I'm talking about. There is nothing worse than a Jewish chorus line, I'm telling you. Because not only do we have no coordination in playing sports, we can't sing to save our goddamn life. But that's a whole different story. We can play the guitar fine and be wonderful guitarists. Singing's a whole different story. And then, of course, there's the official Prince of Egypt soundtrack containing the actual songs from the film. I've not heard of this country-themed Nashville soundtrack. Nor do I want to, but maybe out of curiosity will get the best of me and I will listen to it after I do this review. The only song I think I've heard, well, because I don't think it's from the inspirational, because I think it is part of, because it is the credit song. So I don't think I've really heard anything from the gospel inspirational soundtrack. But I wouldn't be surprised if the two credit songs, which was, the two credit songs were, one was the, of course, the Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston duet of When You Believe, I think the other one, yeah, the other one was Boyz II Men, and I guess it's, I would guess Boyz II Men, Casey and JoJo, Baby, because I'm looking at it right now, what they're saying is on there, yeah. That they would be a part of that. Yeah, Boyz II Men, When I Will Get There, Dead, you know, like Sis, Williams, I thought Casey and Joe would be there. Probably are. Anyways, moving on, because that's not important. I just want to make mention, because I think, quite honestly, it's silly that there were three soundtracks, with two of them really being unnecessary. Anyways, on to the songs proper. The songs do a great job of telling the story. In fact, that's kind of its problem, I think, with a lot of the songs. The songs, there are definitely lovely songs. The River Lullaby, Deliver Us are both great songs. Through Heaven's Eyes, I think, ultimately is my favorite. And then there's some of the songs that are good. They're not as good as those, though. You know, like All I've Ever Wanted, both Moses' version and the Queen's reprise, along with The Plagues, are very good songs as well as far as telling the story. I just think that the songs are just a bit too streamlined. And, you know, in certain cases, it seems like, you know, there's either, you know, the two worst songs are Playing with the Big Boys by Hotep and Huey, who are voiced by Steve Martin and Martin Short. And, you know, the When You Believe song. In this case, in the movie, where it's played by, you know, Miriam and Zipporah and a chorus. Now, towards the end of the song, when it's the chorus, that's when the song actually gets great. But when it's just Michelle Pfeiffer and Sandy Dubowski, who is Miriam's singing voice, it's kind of slow. And it's definitely not as inspirational as the Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston. And there just seems... It seems like that beginning part of that song is just playing it by the numbers of a duet. It only gets more engaging and more grand as the song gets on. Those two I thought were the biggest disappointments, because those are the two songs I was actually looking forward to the most, and they didn't hold up to my expectations. In particular, the fact that they went with a Disney-style, take a shot, with two former people who helped worked on Disney, take a shot, soundtracks. So it's just, I think the songs are a bit too streamlined. Certainly, what they do a great job of is telling the story. But this is a case of where there's a bit too much story and not enough fun of the song. Because this is supposed to be a musical. And maybe I'm spoiled by Howard Ashman, you know, and the songs that came before. But I'm, like, waiting for that song, that just that fun song that's really going to engage me in the movie. And I don't feel like I really ever got that. I think Through Heaven's Eyes came the closest to that. But really, nothing really engaged me in the movie. The score is just epic. It's, you know, Hans Zimmer does a wonderful job, you know, especially when the camera pulls back and you have these great background shots, which we'll be talking about in a little bit. Oh my god, the score is just amazing. And just, you know, when playing instrumental pieces of some of the songs, in particular When You Believe, as they're traveling, it's just absolutely amazing. So I really enjoyed the score for that matter, and the score really helped and did a great job of being that adjective, that verbiage for the film. I definitely think that the score is better than the songs, because again, the songs are just a bit too streamlined for me. It's they're a bit too much to the point, and they're lacking that joy that any song, you know, the fact of the matter is, you can have this very sorrowful... It's actually... Maybe emotion's a better word to use. And I'm not saying that they weren't acting, because people in these songs... Well, some of the songs... We'll get to that. Did a great job acting, and they did put emotion, but they put emotion in the storytelling aspect, not in the singing aspect of it. And as such, there's a lack of sort of musical emotion with these songs. So, but with that being said, still, the songs are... You know, I guess the reason I'm talking about that emotion aspect is that the songs work well when you're watching the movie. I don't know if any of these songs would work well if you put them on a cassette and you put them in your car. As I say that, I come to the realization that only... like three people in the world would probably record the songs onto a cassette and put it in a car. So in the case of cassette, CD, or iPod, yeah, this is not necessarily songs you listen to them on your own. These are songs, I feel they really only work when you're listening to them while watching the movie. And that's great for the movie, but if you're going to pull back and listen to these songs, like I said, with the exception of the Mariah Carey Whitney Houston duet of When You Believe, which was obviously made for radio, they don't really work well, basically on radio and by themselves. But overall, music I thought was extremely well done. Let's move on to animation. I really enjoyed the animation because, yeah, there's nothing about this that didn't scream Disney. Take a shot. I am determined to get you drunk. I'm like a fat man at a bar with a pretty blonde. And somewhere Donovan Morgan Grant is ready to kill me. I just know it. I feel a disturbance in the force. I really did enjoy the overall style. Thin lines. I kind of almost feel like maybe they took some inspiration, obviously, from Aladdin. Because, again, you had a lot of those same Arabic, you know, the S-curves and everything. And went with some similar color schemes and everything. But a bit darker. Because, again, if there's anything this movie screamed to me about, it definitely was sort of that same Arabian Nights art style. With the S-curves in places, but also sort of the straight and you know, mathematical eccentricities of Egyptian culture. I think they balanced the soft curves with the hard lines very well in the overall style. And overall, very much enjoy it. I mean, the thing about it is, if there's good and bad with this, because the whole point of it was they wanted to go for a Disney style. And the thing about it is, if you didn't know this was made by Disney and made by DreamWorks, if you didn't know who made this, you would swear this must have been made by Disney. Because that's how close to Disney style it is. From the character designs and everything. And I guess the good about that is they were going for the style that was very popular, and that Disney style was very popular. But the fact of the matter is the style didn't define what the studio was. And even though DreamWorks would have some good movies in this time, my feeling, personally, like Prince of Egypt, The King and I, Titan A.E., which I've seen and I thought was personally a good movie. Some people, I'm sure, disagree with me. I thought it had an awesome soundtrack, to be quite honest, as well. Anyways, that's a movie for another time, maybe this summer. If it ever comes back on Netflix. But, at the same time, it didn't give DreamWorks an identity. I would argue that DreamWorks really didn't get its own identity until it moved to CG and did Shrek. As much as I kind of hate to say that. Because, again, it's not the fact that the Disney style is bad, but you had a non-Disney company doing the Disney style. I guess if their intention was to, like, blow up Disney, you know, the attraction of the Disney style by having everybody doing Disney style and making it not that much more important, I guess they succeeded. But I don't think that was their desired effect. So, you know, there's good and bad with that. But overall, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the character designs. First of all, Moses and Pharaoh, I love their designs. You know, Moses, there's a softness overall to his design, whereas Pharaoh, you know, Ramses had this very hard, sort of angular style. And again, sort of that good and evil, but the lines blurred here, you know. Sort of classic angular villain face. Kind of reminds me a bit of Jafar in a way. You know, whereas you had sort of more round, friendly face of Moses. And they use that to their advantage in story to play on certain effects. So overall, I just love their designs. Zipporah, you know, again, really doesn't get much, you know, like, in the Ten Commandments for that matter. Doesn't get much attention. As a character that I think, overall, when the story's told, doesn't get much attention. She gets a lot more here, and I thought they came up with a great character design. The overall color scheme, I think, works. There's almost a warrior feel to her that I thought worked extremely well. You know? And I think that made her character stand out when normally her character was made not to stand out. And I really appreciate that they did that. It's like, this is Moses' wife. This is the person who has the most faith in him and follows him, even though she thinks this journey to free the people out of Egypt is suicide. But she has faith in her husband and, you know, goes with him. And that's important to the film. And so I think it's very important to have a very unique character design that does stand out. And certainly it does. And the other character designs, you know, Miriam and Aaron, I wrote, you know, I thought did a great job. You can see, because you see them as kids early on, and you can see when they're growing up, like, I can see how that kid grew up into that. I love the sort of skinniness of Aaron, in a way, as somebody who had, you know, Evan, somebody who's, like, endured himself and like, submitted himself to the slavery system. But Miriam, more healthy, more full, is sort of representative of somebody who is pushing back, and so I love that artistic choice. I really love also the designs of Set and Tuya. Because for the most part, the, you know, again, with Sete, it was a great job of, you know, again, the angular face that, you know, again, that very stern taskmaster, somebody who's wise beyond his years about what makes this kingdom. But again, in particular when you get towards the end of the film, or not the end of the film, but when you get to that part where it basically revealed, yeah, I killed the children of Egypt, I made this horrible order, and I really don't think anything of it because they were slaves, or they're not human. You know, there's enough fatherly aspect in his design to have, it makes you understand Moses's conflict of, like, oh my God, how could this man who I love, you know, do this? You know, how could my mother accept it? Especially with Tuya, who, again, there's this very, you know, very soft, you know, very accepting feel to her character design, and it makes those scenes all the more, you know, I don't want to say terrible, but conflicting and just heartbreaking. Because, you know, here's his parents who he loves, his family, but they've done this horrible thing and they're not thinking really anything because it is, they're saying it is what it is, they're just slaves. And it's conflicting with Moses' beliefs. Again, beliefs versus family is a big thing in this movie. So I love that aspect of it. The action animation was just wonderful, you know, whether it be the plagues and the different wrathes of God, you know, the fire coming out from the heaven. My favorite being the splitting of the Red Sea. And that may seem obvious, but just that action of, you know, you see that, and you, particularly when they're walking through and you have, and this goes into special effects and that stuff too, but you have the water and the lightning flashes and you see the animals, you see the whale swimming. And it's like, we're going to get into backgrounds in a second, but it's like, these action scenes, whether the action be the notion of, like, raging water being held back, or whether it be a plague, whether it be a chariot race, overall, the action is just extremely well done. Very fluid, very clear, very much like what Disney would do, so take a shot. That leaves us with backgrounds and special effects, which kind of talked into, oh my God, I love the backgrounds. Hey, let me say it here. Influenced by Disney, influenced by Disney, influenced by Disney. That means you have to take three shots. I'm gonna get you drunk. But how can you not say this? Because everything about the backgrounds and special effects screams Disney. You know, obviously Jeffrey Katzenberg told them the secret. Mind you, he had Brenda Chapman, so he had animators that also knew it too. But he told the secret of Disney was the special effects and backgrounds. Because really, that is the secret to their animation. As good as their character design, as good as the action animation is that overall art style in conjunction with the backgrounds and special effects that makes their animation just pop out. And oh my god, the locations. The epic locations that just leave you in awe and wonder. They are absolutely amazing. You know, and the camera work here, just, oh my god, the camera work. Just amazing, you know, the shot into where, you know, in the beginning where, you know, all the different shots of them building the pyramids and, you know, the Taskmasters looking down on them as they're traveling and pulling these rocks. And it's just like, everything about this movie was just all epic on a grand scale. You know, particularly when they're in the throne room and it looks out into their kingdom and you see the faces and everything, and it just puts everything into scale. It's just absolutely amazing. When he's, you know, in the desert and he's married and he's a shepherd and he goes into the location where the burning bush is, that's just a, you know, great location as well. And when the plagues are, you know, befalling Egypt, you know, the background locations really set the stage for making those plagues, you know, in particular when hellfire and brimstone is coming down and darkness is sweeping over Egypt. It's like, holy shit. Again, and then the Red Sea party, it's like epic grand location after epic grand location after epic grand location. It's this. If there's one thing animation-wise that really stood out in this movie, it's the background and special effects. And the thing about all the animation is it all did a great job just adding that unique identity of Prince of Egypt to the movie, to where you see a scene from the movie like, Prince of Egypt, I know where it's from. And that's very important. So it definitely had that unique special aspect within the animation. With that, it is time for a break. I'm going to play some promos because I'm a bit push. So I'm going to go to my Nile River and hope that it's not filled with blood and pull out some diet diet ginger ale. God help me. Anyways, so I'm going to play some promos for you guys, and when we come back, we're getting into acting and into story. After these messages,
Superman,
Captain Marvel,
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2,
Sergeant Rock,
the Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow,
Jonah Hex,
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing,
Wonder Woman,
the new Teen Titans,
the Haunted Tank,
Infinity Incorporated,
Worlds Will Live,
Green Arrow,
Worlds Will Die,
Supergirl,
The Flash,
and that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America,
the All-Star Squadron,
the Huntress,
Ariana,
the Metal Man,
Firestorm, the Nuclear Man,
the Outsiders,
Green Lantern,
the Blue Beetle,
the Crime Syndicate,
Warlord,
the Guardians of the Universe,
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents,
and many, many more,
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at twotruefreaks.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like...
Gatchaman!
Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about...
Tatsuo! Ganino!
Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero, and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise. Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardus is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos.
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew. Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com. And on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
And welcome back. And let's get right back into it with acting, which means, of course, it's time to go over our cast list. So, we have Val Kimmer as Moses, Ralph Fiennes as Ramses II, Michelle Pfeiffer as Zipporah, Sandra Bullock as Miriam, Jeff Goldblum as Aaron, Patrick Stewart as Sete the First, Helen Miriam as Queen Tuya, Danny Glover as Jethro, and Steve Martin as Hep Totep, with Martin Short as Huya, the two. sort of assistant guys. And that's something about this is like, good. Wow. This movie was packed. If there was ever the definition for how many names we can get on the box. Scott, this is your example. I mean, God damn it. Val Kilmer, Michelle Pfeiffer, Sandra Bullock, Jeff Goldblum, Patrick Stewart, Danny Glover, Helen Mirren, Steve Martin, Martin Short. And Ralph Fiennes is probably a big one as well. I just don't probably have a good memory of him. Though, looking at the thing, he's had a lot of big... I think he is a big actor. I probably just don't have many memories of him. Because if I did, I'd remember him. Of course, again, my memories of Sandra Bullock are him, are her hanging off a goddamn cruise ship. So what does that tell me? Overall, I thought the voice acting... It's good in some places, and then... Others, you could tell... Paycheck! Look at my paycheck! Thank you, DreamWorks, for my paycheck! But for the most part, I thought most of them were trying to act seriously and do a great job. Really, when I say that paycheck part, that it's with two villains, we'll get to them. I guess first we'll start off with Val Kilmer. And he just did, oh my god, an absolutely, I thought, wonderful job playing a very different Moses. A Moses that almost hates himself and has to find himself. And that's the really unique thing about it is he did a great job of playing. He's very sympathetic, like, my god, I'm part of this family that did all these horrible things. And you know, he has to find himself, and he has to find his family, and he has to find his faith. And there's a very sincereness with Iceman here. I mean Val Kilmer. To the point to where when Batman, when Moses goes into the cavern to get the burning bush, you know, it speaks to him in his own voice. Which, you know, he also voices God in this. So it's like, I would have loved to be there for that meeting. It's like, so Val, sit down. So, you know, we have this movie, Prince of Egypt, and we want you to play Moses. Like, okay, you know, that's a legendary role. Like, well, we do have one more. We want you to play God. Excuse me? We want you to play God. So you can see that I'm playing God. Yes. Okay. Do it. Go home. Honey, I'm God. That's what you tell me every night, honey. Why did I do this the whole trip again? Why was this trip even necessary? I have no idea. Anyways. See that train down the hill? It is completely my fault. I've derailed my own podcast. And I don't feel apologetic at all. Honestly, like I said, it's just that sincere, sympathetic aspect of, like, of somebody searching for himself that I really love that Val Kilmer did. And then as God, the very soothing, warming, you know, I'm the Lord your God, I'm here to be your Lord and Savior, I'm here to be, you know, your warmth and to protect you because I am a loving God. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to kill the firstborn. Doesn't say that, but, you know. The contradictions of the Bible, ladies and gentlemen, they're always fun. I really would love to go into a Lewis Black bit right now, but again, we're already derailed off the track, but I need to somehow steer it back on track. But the point I'm trying to get to with him playing God is that it was just such a wonderful artistic choice to have him do the same voice. Because again, really the whole concept is God is our own voice. God is inside of us. So essentially for a lot of people, the voice of God is our own voice in our own unique way. Not in the whole like, oh, we think we're God and we think we're better than everybody. But again, God's voice is either our own voice or somebody familiar who we look up to. Because, again, that's how you create that warm, smooth, soothing feeling. So I really love that artistic aspect of choosing to have him be the voice of God. And I thought it worked very well. Michelle Pfeiffer. I thought did a great job with the, you know, I wish she would have had more time, at least her character. I wish she would have had more time. Certainly in that beginning, again, I go back to that whole warrior feel that she gave that character that I thought was really well done. And again, particularly one of my favorite scenes in the movie, at least comedy-wise, is the scene where she's they're saying, the man's in the well, and she's trying to save the man in the well, and when it turns out to be him, it's like, bye. Uh-huh. And again, that's a great job with the animation, just like, she's leaning her up, like, I don't think he needs saving. And then walks up, like, and the three little girls, by the way, I love those three little girls. I don't have their names on my list, and I haven't been able to find them. But God bless those three little girls. I love those characters. Those characters were hilarious. I love them. And mind you, that was a great scene for Rose. It's like, hey, these are camels. Like, yeah? Come back, camels. So I thought Michelle Pfeiffer did an excellent job as a poor, again, really giving a very defined, unique, independent voice. Sandra Bullock, surprisingly, did a good job in this film. She put a lot of emotion, which I think it's a lot more than you usually see her put in. And again, by no means am I trying to sit here and say that Sandra Bullock is a bad actor. I'm just saying there are some movies where I don't feel emotion from her, and there are some I do. Definitely there was a more dramatic role, and I think in her more dramatic roles, she puts a little bit more effort into it, and I think it shows here, because there definitely was a bit more of an effort, and just ignore the man on the other side of this, the blanket there. And of course, Jeff Goldblum. I love Jeff Goldblum. I don't know why I love hearing his voice so much. And I just think he's a wonderful actor, and he did a great job here. You know, he only had a few lines, but Aaron just really, I thought, shone through, which I think needed to happen. Because you had Miriam as sort of more assertive one than Aaron. And Aaron had to find his way. And as such, Miriam had more lines than Aaron. So as such, I think Jeff Goldblum had to have a bit more of a commanding performance to put Aaron on that same level as Miriam, because even though he didn't have that many lines, to make his character feel important. And he definitely did that, and I love that. Feral Sete and Tuya, and the reason I put them in the protagonists, even though they're in that middle, because they do a horrible thing, but I think it's one thing that this film does very well is, again, the conflict between the morals and legacy and everything, and it on the matter of their environment. They really are people who are of their environment. And, you know, they are shown as very caring people. They just did this very horrible thing that, to us, is a very horrible thing. And I thought they did a great job with those characters. I mean, Patrick Stewart has a wonderful voice, and it just, the epicness of it shines through, and it's just like this very commanding pharaoh who's in charge. Trying to set his sons right. And then you have the very caring aspect of Helen Miriam. Oh, I thought they did a great job. That brings us to antagonist, and going right on there, probably what I felt was the best actor of the film, Ralph Fiennes as Ramses. Ramses is the best character in this movie. You would think Moses would be, and I enjoy Moses, and Moses is a very well done character, both in voice and in story, but the character that really makes this whole movie go and brings it all together is Ramses, as we'll be getting to in story. And just Ralph Fiennes just did, oh my god, this wonderful job of this character who was just torn apart by one half wanting to be, you know, care for his family, all of his family, and then the other half, you know, to be torn towards the legacy that is the kingdom of Egypt and his empire and keeping it together, and that you have to, you know, be firm yet through this strong, merciless fist in this merciless world. And just this tragic character. And again, and that's the thing, is that Ramses, again, going into this movie, and like I said, I never saw this. Every like version of the Passover story I've seen, Ramses has always been portrayed as a fucking douchebag. Okay? Let's all be honest about this. There is nothing to like about him. I know I find myself crying with what happens to Ramses, because it's just such a tragic character. He's left with nothing by the end of it. And it's not his fault. It just, we'll get more to this in story. And it's just that Ralph Fiennes did a wonderful job bringing that out. Who didn't have a wonderful job of bringing that out is Steve Martin and Martin Short and their characters, which were obviously the comic relief. The problem is they never played them that way. It almost feels like they were, in some ways, playing it like a line read. And I don't want to sit there and say that they weren't trying. Maybe they were told to, you know, play it very straight, which is not out of the option. But regardless of whether it was a directorial decision for them to play it straight or they just played it straight because it's a paycheck or whatever, there's no emotion in it. And there's just that missed opportunity because you have two good comedians and there's really nothing funny about them whatsoever. There really isn't. Or at least voice-wise. So, like, Steve Martin, Martin Short, just these disappointments with this film. It's like, I wanted more out of them. It's one of the reasons why I wish maybe we had maybe 10 more minutes of this movie. Because I think that 10 minutes could have been, 10, maybe even 15 minutes could have been used to just really do some things with, you know, give characters more time. Get us to know the characters a bit more, add a bit more comedy. Because I don't know if 10 minutes would have helped the acting, though, here. Because, again, it's generally about, you know, you have humorous characters. I'll get to it in a second. Because, again, these are characters that, if Ron Clements and John Musker were in charge of this film, they'd be getting hit with everything. And every time they were on screen, you know, it's comic relief time. And again, that goes back to the song. The song, playing with the big boys now, while told a great story and this great concept of, you know, this idea that, you know, their magic isn't on par with God, you know, because they can create God, you know, snakes too. It's like, well, God's power allows the staff to be created into a snake. They have to use mirrors and smoke and... you're only smoking mirrors. You're only smoking mirrors tonight. I'm sorry, my inner radio popped on. But they use smoke and mirrors, you know, to fool everybody that they created snakes out of rods when they more than likely just had them in back pocket or something. You know, again, magician tricks. And that's a very novel idea, and that told that story very well. But the song itself, how they sung it, just wasn't very funny. And when it could have been, you know, making that story funny... making that song funny, everything would just work so much well. But, you know, overall, like I said, the acting is very, very well done. With that, let's get into story. And the main plot is basically about Moses' journey to find himself. And there's also the family plot that revolves around this. It goes with that overall theme of family versus faith and legacy, and we'll get into that. But just overall, it is the story of Moses' journey, finding himself as the savior of the Hebrews, and how that sort of conflicts with the family that he grew up with. And really, that's the big story here. You know, again, when you combine sort of the really well-done animation along with the great voice acting here, you have these very believable, very sympathetic characters. You know, and again, Moses having to deal with, you know, being brought up with his parents who he loves, and then finding out he's a Hebrew, and then learning that Well, his parents just killed Hebrews because they were slaves to them. They weren't people. They were just objects to be owned. And it just the way that impacts him and the way he struggles, and it ultimately leads to him doing the deed that causes him to run away to where he kills a guy. It's just that whole build-up to that is just really well done. And then, of course, him coming among Jethro's tribe and becoming part of that family, ultimately marrying Zipporah, just that whole story aspect of every aspect of him fighting himself and the fact that he hasn't, and that's one of the reasons I love that song, because, and it just, not only did it tell a great story and move the story along, it just, of all the songs, it was the most fun. And it's just, again, that whole montage aspect of just him coming to his own, becoming something greater. Because again, the whole aspect of Heaven's Eyes is that Heaven's Eyes are in your eyes. So it's basically, it's not so much how does Heaven see you, but it's how do you see yourself. And we're getting very deep here on Tom's Prerogative, aren't we? But then, you know, that the point, again, finding himself and finding, you know, meeting the burning bush and finding he has to go to Egypt. He has to face his past before he can move to the future. And having to face it. And then, oh my God, the scenes between Moses and Ramses in that part, just, you know what's going to happen. You know it's going to be tragic. But it's just like, and again, because of the way they play the characters, everything, and then the way Ramses is written in this, of just this, they are two sides of a coin. Or they're people on two similar journeys, but one ultimately handles it the right way and one handles it the wrong way. And basically, like I said, this goes into that overall theme. It's the theme of family versus faith / legacy. You know, how do you integrate, you know, the whole aspect of who you are and what your family is and everything into your faith and into your legacy and into your location's legacy? Ramses can't do that. Moses is. And that's really what separates them. Moses, in his own way, particularly after going on a journey, is able to come into contact like, that's my family. I can't be with that family. I will always love my family of Ramses and of father and mother who raised me. I always be grateful of that, but my family is the Hebrews, and I can't stand back while they are being made slaves, being made to suffer. Whereas you almost get the feeling like if he didn't have that court and, you know, all the people surrounding him who, you know, and all that pressure on him, you know, he would like, you know what, you're right. You can take the Hebrews and go. It was completely a product of the environment that put the pressure on him that he couldn't let them go. And one of my favorite scenes in the movie is towards the end when they're, you know, they're under, you know, in the castle, and Moses and Ramses, they're meeting in the dark and they're talking at that last time. And there's that hopeful way, you feel like he's about to turn Ramses. He's like, he's at that moment where he's finally going to get through to Ramses, and then Ramses' son comes in. And because his son has been brought up as a product of the environment as well, he is this hateful, who looks at Moses as just this object and this hateful thing. And you can see that just the pain in Ramses' face as he just has to, you know, it's like, I am sorry, my hands are tied. So the only thing I can do is that I will create a great wrath. And just that mood swing. And it's like, I find it laughable. Because, you know, you have them, you know, movies like Maleficent that want to really make the villain seem sympathetic. This is how you make a villain sympathetic. Because after watching this movie, it's like, you know, you just feel so much for Ramses and you hate everything that happens to him. Almost to the point where I'm hating my own God. It's like, how could you do this to this poor man? Like, really? Just Talmos is like, gather up everybody and start running, and I will lay down fire for 5 days. Couldn't you have done that, God? Couldn't you have done that? Would that have been so hard? Do we need to bring down an entire kingdom and social system? Was that really necessary? It's like, these are the type of feelings that you're having for Ramses. Mind you, because he's so well played and everything, all leads into it. But again, still, in the story they're going to, and it's like, because he can't connect, he can't say, he is my family, and I care for him, and he's of a different faith, and I can let my legacy go to care for my family, which would have been the right thing to do, but he can't, because he's a product of the environment. Just so well done in this movie. And one thing that kind of helps me but kind of doesn't, it just slightly misses the mark, and it's one of those things that separates good from great, and it's why I talk about that whole, I think the movie could have used maybe 10, maybe 15 more minutes. It's characters. It's like, you know, you have Zipporah at the start, but she's almost pretty much invisible up until she does that duet musical number with Miriam after they go to Egypt. And, like, I think she could have had a bit more lines and a bit more character development. Same with Miriam, and same with Aaron, and same with a lot of sort of the little supporting characters, you know, including maybe some more time for comedy. It's just this unique thing. They're very strongly built, and they're very sort of written into the story, and the story is very strong. But I just, like, I would love to see more of those characters. And it's like, they have more character development than we've probably seen of these characters before, but there also can be more. And it's like, I see that more as sitting there saying, like, these characters could have been more what they kind of were. I see where they're going, but it's like, I felt like the character developments were incomplete because they spent so much time on Moses and Ramses. And again, I'm not complaining about Moses and Ramses. There's certainly other things that, if they weren't going to extend it, I think they could have cut out. I mean, if in particular, the comedy. You know, if you weren't going to go really get a comedy route, you didn't need that song. And then again, this goes again to the comedy, is they could have used a lot of Ron Clements and John Musker as, like, there are certain comedy bits that's like, yeah, that's straight out of the Ron Clements and John Musker rule book of, like, you know, when in doubt, hit the sidekick. But it's that element of, you know, either do comedy or not. And in a film in this series, you needed comedy. And it's like, comedy is very nostalgic feeling, a very sort of classic feel to it that makes it work. I just wish there was more of it to give it a more warmer feeling. And it's to help build some character development as well. You know, maybe during the plagues, you know, Pharaoh sends Hemotep and Huey to get Zipporah, you know, to hold her from blackmail. And it's like, she, like, just, it's like, just shoots him away. It's just like, oh, God, that's just really necessary. And, you know, something along that. Something playful, because if there's one aspect of this film, is that definitely towards the end, the film just gets really, really dark. And I don't think there's enough comedy in the back half of the film. And I think it could have used some comedy in certain places. Overall, though, I thought the pacing was done extremely well, though. Except towards that point. I just think that once they turned the Nile River into blood, I feel like that whole sequence from there to when they, you know, the Israelites were finally released was a bit rushed. Particularly through the plague. I think they could have spent more time on focused on the plagues and their impact on Egypt instead of it just being montage and a song. It's one of the reasons I'm kind of iffy on this, because I like the song, and the song did a great job of telling the story, but I felt you could have done more there, and that place didn't necessarily need to be a musical number but could have been a song telling a story as far as a score telling a story. So, overall, I really enjoyed this film. I think this is a great film. I'm very much surprised. I didn't know what to expect because, like I said, I never seen this film, and it's DreamWorks, and I'm like, I don't know whether I'll like it. I know I liked The Prince of Nine, and I know I liked A.E. because I've seen those before. But again, it's like, it's my faith and what I feel and everything. And I just thought it was an extremely well-done film. Just the visuals are amazing. A great score. Songs are, you know, kind of iffy. And that is to the part that, like I said, this is a film that is very, very good, but not great. And I say that by saying that it's on that line. It's literally on the line between very, very good and great. It's, but slowly on that side is just very, very good because of things like the songs not being memorable. And I hate to use that term, but it is that they're not radio playable. You have the real lack of comedy, in particular towards that back half. And there's some characters that I felt like, you know what? Again, I go to Huey and Imhotep. I'd use them for comedy or not. And it's like, they used them too little for comedy to the point to where I feel you could have just eliminated those characters completely and wouldn't have made a difference to the film. I really think so. I mean, you could have had those comedy scenes with Moses and Ramsey happen to anybody, for that matter. And there seemed no point for those characters to be there and to be voiced by big voices. So, like I said, it's very good, very good, bordering on great. So I give The Prince of Egypt a 4 out of 5. I think it's a really well done film. I think if you are a person who really is connected to your faith, you will enjoy this. It's very respectful to the faiths of all faiths, that's something that makes me happy, that it is very. I remember my rabbi going to see it and doing a sermon about how good it was. Yeah, I do remember that. So, I think people of faith will enjoy this film. And just overall, it's a great telling of a classical biblical story with this sort of great sort of connection about family and what kind of how legacy and faith can kind of tear a family apart unintentionally. I think it has one of the great sympathetic characters in Ramses. Because of the way he's played and the way the actor plays him, it's just amazing. Yeah. So, 4 out of 5 from me, and that is it for this episode of Tom's Variety Bib. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any emails or comments, and I'm sure you have a couple about how I need to go die in a fire, remember there are several ways you can go tell me to go die in a fire. One, you can email me at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also find us on Stitcher, and I'm going to get work again on updating that. I apologize for that, but you can find us on Stitcher at www.stitcher.com. Like us and listen to us on there and leave us a comment. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find at www.facebook.com and searching for The Absolution Network. Like us and leave a comment there. Just make sure you click the right Absolution. There's a couple actual Absolution Networks. We're the ones that can have links to this podcast. And of course, you can always contact the show by leaving in the post section on our website, which is at www.an132productions.com. And of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes the Falcon Momentum, the Anticast, with Relic, Shintai Controls Wrestling, Anime, and Video Game Videos, which he's been releasing a lot of lately. John Ramos's Toku and anime videos and voice acting videos. And I'm going to be proud to say that, you know, if you're going to anime next, the plan is for us to be there in one way or another. I know he's going, and I'm definitely planning on some form to try to go. We're definitely going to be making it to anime next. check that out. We'll have more information as it comes apart of whether we'll be doing panels, because we don't know if our panels have been accepted yet. I don't know if I'm pressed yet, actually. So, as more information comes available, we will let you guys know. I just want to get a word out, because that is coming up in a couple months. And I am already making plans for Otakon as well. So check that out. And then, of course, my other stuff that, of course, includes CMG's Wrestling Reviews, the Intergalactic Graphic Review, Tom's Top 10, among others. Also, make sure you check out Comic Book Crazy at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com for Hexcast, Comic Book Crazy, and Spectacular Web. And, of course, Tokyo SOS at www.tokyosos.132productions.com for my Godzilla podcast, Tokyo SOS. And of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site, which you can find, which of course includes Michael Bailey, News, Lombox, Spidey Dude, and the Clone Sucker Chronicles, Seems Like You're in the Critical Hit podcast, of course, Scott Gunner, and the 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network, where you're enjoying it. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Frogative. Next week, we're going to be reviewing another movie I have been waiting to watch that I've heard so much about and really been looking forward to, because guess what? I'm a Who Framed Roger Rabbit movie fan. For those who don't know, it's my favorite movie of all time. Oh, there's one movie that has heard that has that same similar style as in live action versus animation, which I've not seen. I'm, of course, talking about 1994's Cool World. Time to check out Hollywood and go, ow, ow, ow. So until next time, my Tsunami Generation.
Find cover. It's going to get too dangerous.
Stay gold.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.